I may not have a license to kill, but liberalism dies a little every time I pull the trigger on it. This is a conservative's perspective. Hey everybody, James Bostic here, Conservative's Perspective on the Mojo 5.0 Radio Network, Mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you should be, because it is the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio, Mojo50.com. Well, hey there, hi there, ho there. How's everything today? You doing good? Me too. Just had a really nice breakfast, and I've sat down to the microphone here in the Mountain State on a cool, quasi-overcast Sunday. It's a great day. It's a great day. You know, I'm still thinking about all the stuff that's happened in the week since the great day, you know? It's been... I don't really know how to say it. It's been a very satisfying week. Have you noticed how quiet it was, too? But I think we talked about that last week. How quiet it's been since Donald Trump, was elected. One protest that I can think of that I saw on the news, there were about 1,000 people somewhere in New York whining and moaning and bitching and crying about the fact that Donald Trump's president. Other than that, haven't seen anybody. Haven't seen the Antifa types. Haven't seen the BLM types out there. Haven't seen the Occupy Wall Street veterans trying to do anything. And I'm wondering why. Well, first off, the catalysts that have been known for stirring these type of people up are kind of worried right now. They're looking to protect themselves. I think the priority now in the intelligence community, throughout the FBI and the intelligence community, they're focusing on trying to protect themselves as opposed to causing harm to the general public, as we've seen in the last few years. So I don't know what it means. I don't know if they're recalculating or if they have a Sunday punch somewhere tucked away for the right moment and they're just waiting to figure out when that right moment's going to be in order to unleash it. It could be a number of things. But right now, I think there's just so much shock and awe going on since Donald Trump has, won the election. And one of the things, I think, and I've watched how this has played out, is not only who he's selecting for his cabinet, but the manner in which he's making these announcements as to who he's selecting for his cabinet. It's like they don't have time to react. No sooner than they come up with a response, they figure out what the response or the counter is going to be to one cabinet member, boom. Trump's making an announcement about the next cabinet member. And one of them that's really got them shook, one of them that's really really has them worried, I think, I've been looking at them at some of the selections. I think the most effective one right now, and I'm not sure if he's even going to make it, but he's even having an effect right now just by being nominated, and that is Matt Gaetz for Attorney General. And it's only been a couple of days since making Matt Gaetz' nomination known that the Department of Justice people have already started to self-deport. They're looking for the exits. They're not happy about this at all. They know what's coming, and they're going to get out while the getting's good. Now, there is a school of thought that seems to think that maybe Matt Gaetz's nomination won't get carried through. He's made some enemies on the Republican side in doing things the way he's done, and it's possible that he may not secure that position. One thing that got him worried, and I'm not exactly sure why, but I can make my guesses, is that he resigned his position in Congress effective immediately. I don't know why that worries anybody. It'll be a couple of months at least before, you know, even if he gets through the selection process, the nomination process, it's not a sure. You can guarantee there's not going to be a single Democrat that votes for the guy. But at the same time, he's got to get all the Republicans. And what they're going to do is they're going to work maybe in trying, they're going to work pretty hard, I think, maybe, to get him out of there, because he's one of the guys that they clearly fear and dread the idea of him becoming Attorney General. Now, the Senate may, again, like I said, try to derail the Gates nomination. They can vote him out. They can, you know, they find some reason, imagined or otherwise, and try to stop it. Now, if that happens, it's also possible that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis could then appoint him to be the replacement U.S. Senator from Florida, thus sending back a pretty ticked off Matt Gaetz into the silo, into the hive that derailed him. Now, those people in the know who are, you know, clued in on these things and focus on them way more intently than I do, realized that the Department of Justice, Maine Justice, was going to be the target of the greatest transition. So if Matt Gaetz does get through the nomination process, if they can get the votes together and go ahead and approve his selection as Attorney General, the abandonment of positions in the Justice Department, it probably already started. And there will be this mass exodus from the Justice Department. For the last 8 years, if you've been watching anything at all, and I know you guys have, the lawfare effort that's gone from the Department of Justice and has been directed against President Trump or anyone in and around his orbit has been nonstop. It's been relentless for the last 8 years. From Michael Flynn to Paul Manafort to George Papadopoulos to Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, all the way to the 1,500 protesters from January 6, 2021, the attacks from within the Department of Justice and their special counsels has been relentless. As I said, Matt Gaetz is the response. Now, the next several weeks are going to be epic as this particular battle concerning Matt Gaetz as Attorney General carries out through the executive and the legislative branches. Matt Gaetz also presents the biggest, most irresistible bait for the intelligence community to watch being dragged in front of them, and it'll be interesting to see how they react. It is the mother of all bombs. It is the Moab. That's what Matt Gaetz is, and the DOJ is the target. Many of the rank and file lawyers, rank and file, I guess, department staffers, Justice Department staffers, were already kind of horrified at what Trump might do with the Department of Justice. And you know why they were horrified? Because they know what they did to him. Completely wild, says one of the lawyers there. It's so out of bounds. It's just shocking. He's there for one purpose, to enact retribution. Now, hold it right there. He's there for one purpose, to enact retribution. Retribution for what? Well, we know for what, but is it really retribution, or are we handing out some justice here? See, that's where it gets crazy. We know it was lawful. We know, you know, anybody that participated in these put-up jobs, these frame-up jobs against Donald Trump and anybody within his circle was lawfare. That's all it is. It's attacking. They've corrupted the judicial system here in the United States, especially at the Justice Department. And they did their best to crush this guy, to crush everybody around him, and they came up short. They failed. And now that they've given their shot, they know that it's time for Donald Trump to give his. And I'm sure that there were a lot of lessons that Donald Trump learned from his first 4 years in office. And I don't think some of the mistakes or the perceived missteps that people were critical of in his first 4 years will surface again in the second. I'd be very surprised, indeed, if that happened. So, it's going to be a huge change. Now, there are other departments. We're going to take a look at some of the other picks as well. But Matt Gaetz is the one that really interests me. It's kind of 50-50 in terms of whether he'll actually make it to the Attorney General position. I would like to see it personally because I know what's going to happen. There's going to be a large level of screaming and hair pulling and running. All these people that were in on all these attacks for the last 8 years against Donald Trump and his people, they're going to be rooted out, and they're going to be held to account for these illegal acts. Is it retribution? I suppose in a way, in terms of people. But it's really justice in terms of people getting what's coming to them. It's not retribution. It's not retributive justice. It's justice. These guys knew what they were doing when they actively took up against Donald Trump to engage in this lawfare, knowing it was wrong, knowing what they were doing was wrong, knowing what they were doing was illegal, knowing what they were doing was unconstitutional. They saddled up and they rode in against the guy anyway. And now that he is still standing, now that all the things that they did failed and really had no permanent serious effect, they know it's their turn to take the shot. It's kind of like one of those slapping contests. You ever seen those things? You slap the hell out of the guy, and if he goes down, then you win. That being said, if he doesn't go down, if he doesn't act like he's unduly affected, if he acts like he's not bothered by it, then it's his turn. Donald Trump knows this, and he's been preparing for it for quite some time. I'm pretty sure, like I said, there were a lot of lessons, I think, learned from his first term. And I think having learned those lessons now, it's going to be different. We're going to see things move at a much more rapid pace in terms of getting things done, or the expectations that Donald Trump has out of the Senate and the House. Things are going to move quickly. And they've been moving quickly. I mean, all the things that have changed, it was almost as if just being elected, and I think it has, just being elected has stopped some of this. You've noticed a lot of the woke bullshit is starting to die down. The DEI people are starting to clam up. Universities, businesses are starting to move away from all the wokeness, from the DEI junk. that's going to make for a big change. Are there a lot of unhappy people out there that are still looking to screw up this country, all in the name of Donald Trump being elected? Absolutely. Absolutely. We still have enemies. These people still draw their plans against us. They've been dealt a telling blow. Sadly, they have not been dealt a mortal one. And I'm talking about not actually killing anybody, for the love of God, but to kill the ideology. And I don't know that we'll ever completely kill it. We can wound it. I hope we can mortally wound it so that within time it dies off. Because what we're getting ready to do, we just got started. This first 4 years that we saw with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, oh my God, that was just the start of the fight. And now we've got to respond. And we've got to look at these deep state people, the swamp, for the Hydra, and we've got to root them out and get them not only out of government, but away from anywhere where they might have any kind of considerable influence on government. And that's going to be tough to do because it's a network. These guys are talking about the 51 people who signed the bullshit Russia collusion thing, the laptop thing. They still have friends on the inside. They will still, even with their top secret security clearances removed, deactivated, they still have friends in the business who are going to tell them what's going on. Will they have that access in the same level? Probably not, but it might be pretty close. So they're still going to be in the know. What we have to do is remove these people far enough away so that their influence is negated. That's the thing. And that's going to be the trick. Because there's so many of them. There's so many of them in the State Department. There's so many of them at Justice. And if you put the right cabinet member, you put the right head in there. For example, Matt Gaetz as Attorney General. A lot of these guys are going to run themselves off. A lot of these guys are going to see the writing on the wall, and they are what? They are going to head for the door. It's what we want. But it's going to take decades. It's going to take a long, long time, long beyond the term of the second term of Donald Trump. It's going to take, because there are thousands, maybe tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of these guys that are, you know, they're in each one of these different departments. And each one of them will do everything they can to slow the process of establishing Donald Trump's agenda and what he wants to see done for the country. And it's going to be a dirty job. It's going to be an ugly, dirty job. But they have to go. They got to go. As many of them as we can get rid of. And what will happen is, in time, as there are fewer and fewer of them, it will become easier as they conduct their sabotage on this administration. And don't think for a moment they're not going to conduct sabotage on. They've already started. We just don't know about it. I can guarantee you that. It's not any different than the second term. And they realize now, you know, they're in the Fuhrer bunker. The Russians are closing in. The Americans are closing in. The Allies are circling around him. And they'll never surrender. Okay? They'll never surrender. Leaving on their own, self-deporting, as I said earlier, leaving on their own, that's no different than the Japanese soldiers killing themselves inside the caves. It's no different than what Hitler did. In a way, they're committing suicide, career suicide, rather than be caught. And the ones that remain in time are going to be caught. Just a fact, people. Just a fact. You know what? Getting a little thirsty. I think it's time for a lemonade break. We will be back in just a second. Doesn't mean there's going to be a commercial or anything. I'm just going to hit the pause button. And then the next thing you hear after I say we'll be back in a minute is, hey, we're back. Okay, so we'll be back in just a minute. And we're back. See what I mean? That's all it took. But it really, anyway, that's the magic of radio. So, Matt Gaetz. We have control. Republicans, that is, have control at this point of the Senate and the House. The margins are kind of tight right now, but that being said, Republicans have the majority in both houses. That's important because for the first 2 years, a lot of things can happen. A lot of positive things can happen. And I guarantee you, if they don't happen, it won't be because of Democrat resistance. It will be because of Republican resistance. It will be because of rhinos and old school types, the status quo types that don't want to see these kind of changes because these kind of changes will affect them. And by that, I mean they will affect them most likely economically. Absolutely, baby. Absolutely it will. And they're going to be just like they were last time. You had all these never-Trumpers in the Republican Party. And I don't think these guys are conservative. They may say they're conservatives. And I really don't even think, honestly, in terms of libertarian, in terms of liberal, in terms of conservative, in terms of all that, I don't think Donald Trump is necessarily a conservative. I think he's definitely center-right. But hardcore conservative? No, probably not, but he doesn't have to be. He understands what's right and wrong, and he understands what's good for this country economically as well as socially. Honestly, I really do believe that. I don't know. I think that what happened was at some point in the year or two before he came down that golden escalator in New York with Homer Simpson, he gave long and hard thought, and maybe longer than that in terms of, you know, when he was going to run for president, where he was going to do it. Was he going to be a Republican? Was he going to be a Democrat? Was he going to be an independent? What was he going to do? And I think that he has natural conservative leanings, but at the same time, I don't necessarily think that he considers himself really either conservative or Republican. I think he kind of sees himself, and this is just me talking, he kind of sees himself kind of in the same way I think that Dwight Eisenhower saw himself when he was president of the United States. There were a lot of people clamoring for Eisenhower to run for president after Harry Truman's term expired. And he was very reluctant about this. I mean, and up until he decided to run, nobody really knew much about his politics, whether he was a Democrat, whether he leaned Democrat or Republican. And he finally made that, you know, he made that determination and decided to reveal that he was Republican in his nature. And that was the ticket for whom he would campaign for the presidency. And, of course, he was successful. And I think Donald Trump is a lot like that. Now, I think, again, when it comes down to this, he has more in common, Donald Trump, that is, has considerably more in common with the center-right than he does with the center-left or the extreme-left. Way more. He doesn't agree with a lot. You know, we are all equally in disagreement with a lot of things that the crazy Democrats have done, you know, since the time of Obama. Let's go back to Bill Clinton and some of the nutty things they've done, which weren't bad, which pale in comparison to what Biden and Harris did. I mean, I know a lot of people probably have forgiven Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. Maybe not Barack. And that's something else I've noticed, too. This is the end of Barack Obama's influence. This is, I think, the end of Barack Obama's ability to play kingmaker or queenmaker in this case. But they were stuck. They were absolutely stuck because Biden endorsed Kamala Harris, and nobody expected him to do that. They expected him to just make the announcement that he was stepping down. He wasn't going to be seeking re-election. He was going to finish out his term. And that was going to be the end of the story. And that would leave Schumer and Pelosi and the Obamas free with an open field to basically have another primary. To take a look at their roster and to see who they wanted. But when Joe Biden said that he was confident that Kamala Harris could step into his shoes and make it for another 4 years, and that that was who he was endorsing, they had no choice. And it was always kind of confusing to me why they would reject Kamala Harris, because she spent a lifetime prostituting herself from one job to another. Okay, she got into politics. Her entrance into politics was through Willie Brown's entrance into her. And that's how all that got started, okay? She treated him right. He paid her back. He got her involved in politics. And look where she wound up. She wound up at the vice presidency. But there was always something for something. So the only thing I can think of, the only reason, because if she had become the president, there's no doubt in my mind, she would have been just as big a rubber stamp or a proxy as Joe Biden was. No doubt about it. She would have done everything that they told Joe to do, and he did, without hesitation. But apparently they realized something that a lot of people in the Democrat Party didn't. Or at least a lot of people who voted for Kamala Harris. And that was, in reality, she couldn't win. That Donald Trump was probably, in all likelihood, going to do to her what we saw happen. He won the electoral vote in a landslide. He won the popular vote by 4 million votes. He crushed her. And there were probably a lot of Democrats behind the scenes that knew this was going to happen, but they couldn't say anything. See, they were trapped, because if they spoke out against Kamala Harris, what were they doing? Well, they were speaking out against what? Even though she's not black, they were speaking out against black people and females. Worst of all, they were speaking out against black females. And that is just the one thing that you cannot do in the Republican Party. Let's take a genuine black woman, okay? Let's take Michelle Obama. Let's take, I'm trying to think what her name was, Maxine Waters, Mad Maxine, okay? These people will be loved no matter what, okay? Maxine Waters, caught red-handed with a razor blade and a pile of kitten parts, blood all over the place. They would still vote for her. And in all likelihood, she would probably get elected. Oh, by the way, Nancy Pelosi filed papers. She's running again. 175-year-old Nan out there on the hustings, campaigning, shaking hands, kissing babies, all that crap. She's going to be running again. And she's like I said, 170. And the lemonade is delicious, ice cold and refreshing. Where's the BLM? Where's Antifa? Why haven't they been called in yet? I think this time it wouldn't work. I really do. I think this time, just like if they tried to run another COVID thing, I don't think it would work either, because the American public has learned. We saw and we learned from bitter firsthand experience what totalitarianism is in the United States. And it ain't Donald Trump. It ain't Donald Trump. What happened? We talked about this last week. The data now, based the voter data from 2020 versus what we have now compiled in the election 2024, shows there are 18 million fewer votes. We talked about this last week. 18 million fewer votes. Democrat votes. Where did they go? What happened to them? Well, we can say a certain number of them probably changed their minds after really waking up. Instead of being woke, they woke up, changed their minds, saw the error of their ways, reconsidered their opinions, and decided, no, I can't do that again. We're going to vote for Trump. A number of them probably said, you know what, to hell with both of them. I'm not voting. I'm staying home. A certain number of them probably died, and they voted anyway. They probably still voted anyway, so we won't really technically discount them. But that doesn't account for all 18 million. No, that 18 million is representative of the fraud, the amount of voter fraud that took place during the last election. Think about that. 18 million votes. Fraudulent votes. And nothing's going to happen to anybody. Nothing's going to happen to Jim Clyburn, who was big on the voter harvesting thing, the ballot harvesting thing. Nothing's going to happen to these people. They ripped off a national election. They rigged up and fixed a national election for their guy. They stole the election. Stole it. Rigged it up and ripped it off. And there's not a thing in the world that's going to happen to these cats. None of the election officials that were in on it, all those people that were in on it down in Atlanta and these other major cities like Philadelphia or Los Angeles or New York where all the ballot harvesting took place, nothing's going to happen to these people. We don't even know who the hell they are. And we won't know. But we can take solace. We can take solace in the fact that this time, just like the slogan said, it was too big to rig. It was just too big to rig. And you know what? Here's the thing. If we want to be sure, totally, completely assured that this won't happen again, this is probably how it's going to have to be from now on. When Republicans win, the new Republican Party, which is being transformed, Donald Trump has changed it in the last 6 years, 8 years, and it's going to continue to change into something more positive if we pay close attention, if we cultivate it, if we care for it, if we watch. And they'll never have a chance. These people have always been in the minority. These nutbag lunatic left-wing kooks, they've always been in the minority. But what's happened is they were able to fool enough people and they were able to rig and cheat and scam in enough areas to where they put Joe Biden in. 18 million votes fewer this time. You think this election wasn't as important as it was last? You think it was less important than the last election? No, it wasn't. And I think a lot of people came to grips with the fact that this really was. They understood how important this election was. And that's why we saw the response we did. But it's going to have to be like that all the time. We're going to have to deal with these guys with the same type of electoral force, with the same type of voter impact in all subsequent elections as we did in this one. Never going to change. Never going to change. And just on a personal level, this is something that I'm really excited about. I saw this, I think it was yesterday on Breitbart. President-elect Donald Trump's transition team is putting together a list of United States military officers who were involved in the Biden administration's botched withdrawal from Afghanistan. Two people familiar with the plan told NBC News that the Trump transition team is reportedly in talks about whether or not to establish a commission to investigate the Biden administration's withdrawal from Afghanistan that left 13 American service members dead. The commission would also reportedly gather information about who was directly involved in the decision-making process for the military and how the plan was carried out, among other things. They're taking it very seriously, one person with the plan explained to NBC. And NBC News subsequently reported officials working on the transition are considering creating a commission to investigate the 2021 withdrawal from Afghanistan, including gathering information about who was directly involved in the decision-making for the military, how it was carried out, and whether the military leaders could be eligible, for charges as serious as treason, the U.S. official and person with knowledge of the plan said. Obviously doing this on condition of anonymity. The report from NBC News comes months after Trump honored the 13 fallen U.S. service members during a wreath-laying ceremony at Arlington National Cemetery. In the aftermath of Trump's visit, NPR released an article alleging that Trump campaign officials got into a verbal and physical altercation with a cemetery official who was trying to prevent Trump's campaign from filming and taking photos in Section 60 of Arlington Cemetery. Family members of the 13 fallen U.S. service members issued statements defending Trump and criticized Vice President Kamala Harris for issuing a statement describing Trump's visit to the cemetery as a political stunt. And while Harris was sharply criticized by the Gold Star families in early September, Harris's presidential campaign issued a statement accusing Trump of leaving the Biden-Harris administration with zero plans for an orderly withdrawal, only a dangerous and costly mess. But the truth is, Trump had begun negotiations with the Taliban and had reached a deal, but it had not been completed by the time he left office in January 2020. Biden, against the advice of his military advisors, decided to withdraw all U.S. troops from Afghanistan in September 2021, which prompted the Taliban to sweep into Kabul at the end of August and topple the U.S.-backed government in a surprised rout. The sudden takeover prompted mass panic and chaos as hundreds of thousands of Americans, foreign civilians, and desperate Afghans scrambled to depart. A year after the Taliban took control of Afghanistan in the aftermath of the botched withdrawal, Trump issued a statement describing the withdrawal as being the most embarrassing, incompetent, and humiliating event in the history of the United States. Now, the reality is that a lot of people who committed sins against Donald Trump directly and therefore indirectly against the country and its citizenry, there's nothing's going to happen to them. They'll get a, you know, like so many other people, like Bill and Hillary Clinton, like Nancy Pelosi, like Barack Obama, like anybody that's been caught up in this stuff, there'll be a conviction. There will be a conviction in the court of public opinion. But as far as anything beyond that, probably nothing's going to happen. But this thing with Afghanistan, this was terrible. You know, in the news, they quit talking about it as quickly as they could. You know, they were obligated to talk about it a little bit, but then shortly after that, boom, it's like it never happened. Same thing with like what happened in Palestine, Ohio, East Palestine, Ohio. Same thing that happens with every terrible misstep that the Biden administration took. They talked about it only as much as they had to, and they spun it as positively as they could, and then it was like it never happened. It vanished. It vanished down the rabbit hole. But there were more than 13 people, you know, more than the 13 people that were killed, there were dozens who were injured. They were kept away from the public for a long time. They were forced to sign non-disclosure agreements. They were threatened if they talked to anybody about it, terrible things would happen to them and their family. It was like it never happened. They just washed it away. I want to see something happen here. I really, really want to see something happen here. Two things. Justice Department, I'll be surprised if he gets through the nomination process, if they get him in there. But if they do, Katie, bar the door. I'll be interested to see in how quickly the people who implemented and participated in these lawfare actions against Donald Trump and the people in his orbit, as they said earlier, what happens to them? I want to see a reckoning there, and I definitely want to see a reckoning in the military for all these woke generals and the crazy stuff, that these ridiculous social experiments that they've put our military through. What is the military for, guys? What do we have the military for? Well, to defend the United States against foreign actors, to fight our wars, and to protect the interests of the United States. What do we need in order to be an effective military? Well, we need a bunch of tough guys with really good, strong, reliable equipment who know how to kill people and break things and are prepared to do so when properly directed. Think about that. Do you think we have that in our military today? Now, again, the non-coms, the junior officers, I don't think these are the guys, and the enlisted men, I don't think these are the guys where the problem is. It's at the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It's the general level. It's the general officer level and above. It's the Mark Milleys. It's the Lloyd Austins. It's those guys. And there are a lot of them in there. I don't understand why they did what they did. I don't understand, because it's obvious it was a weakening of our military capability. It's clear. There's no other way to say it. But they did this anyway. And you would think, as professional soldiers, they would know this from the very start. And they would have said something. They would have protested. They would have fought. They didn't. They fell right into line, and they started moving with this stuff. Like they'd been trained to it. But then they like their positions, they like their careers, they like what they have, and they realize that if they didn't do this, the possibility was pretty strong that they would be removed and replaced with someone who would be in favor of these things. So, and again, do we need a lot of go along to get along in this military of ours? No, we don't need that either, but that's what they're guilty of as well. So I'm really, really interested in seeing justice meted out there. And all, and I tell you something else that cracks me up are these people. All these people that have been loud mouths about Trump and talking all this trash about him, now they're horrified that they're going to be put in prison. They're horrified that they're going to be treated the way the Biden administration treated the January 6th protesters. Now, again, James Carville. Carville worried about being put in jail because all the things he said about Donald Trump. They're not going to put Carville in jail. They should, but they won't. And same thing with the Schiff head, Adam Schiff. He's scared. He is pooping peach pits right now. He is so afraid. But nothing's going to happen to him either. Rightfully, it should, because he lied to the American people. He fostered that lie, the Russian collusion hoax. He still does. To this day, he still says it really is a thing. The Schiff head. Yeah. And California reelected him. Californians reelected him. They sent his monkey ass right back there. By God, they did. So while Californians are most likely getting the political representation they believe that they deserve, it's doing a terrible disservice to the rest of the country. They know he's corrupt. They know he's incompetent. They know he's a boob. But, you know, that's what they want. That's what they want in Washington, D.C. I don't know why. I don't understand it. BL used to say, he had this saying, water seeks its own level. Same thing as like birds of a feather. You get the idea. And he's absolutely right. So, you know, California just went completely weird in the last 30 years, man. Completely weird. I remember as a kid in the 70s, growing up watching TV, California was a magical place, man. You had jungles, you had the desert, you had forests, you had, you know, Television City, Century City. All the TV shows, all the movies that came out of California. Where'd it come? They came from California. It was this magical place. It's not anymore. It's a terrible place now. It has been for about the last 25 years. Why? You know why. Look at who's governing. Look who's in the state houses. Look who's in the county commissions. Look who's in the mayor's offices. And you got it. However, there is hope because in this election, there were about twice as many, three times as many counties that went red in California as there were blue. That means maybe something positive is happening here and they're being taken back. We can hope. I mean, that's the only thing we got. And again, this fight that we're engaged in now, that we've been engaged in for 4 years, really 8 years, because these guys started going after Trump, again, from the time he came down that golden escalator. They're on the run. They're wounded. And when is an animal the most dangerous? When it's wounded, when it's cornered. And these guys are kind of like cornered, and they've been hurt. They've been dealt a telling blow, not a mortal one, not a fatal blow, but a telling one. And it has slowed them down. It's incapacitated them some. It's removed a lot of their effectiveness. But they still have a great many people embedded in this government that mean to disrupt and oppose and slow walk and sabotage Donald Trump's policies and the Trump administration's policies for the betterment of this country.
Well, I guess we got a few minutes left. We'll talk about the holidays. Thanksgiving's coming up. And as I have grown older and have a more adult understanding, more mature understanding, a seasoned understanding of gratitude, Thanksgiving is a daily thing to me. Every morning for about, I don't know, 10 years, I guess, whenever I quit drinking, this has been about 10 years, every morning, at least two or three times in the morning. First thing, just about almost always, it's automatic. As soon as I get up, as soon as I shut the alarm off and take stock of my surroundings, the first thing from my brain is, thank you, God. It's there. It comes through. It breaks through all the other intermingled bad and sinful and disruptive thoughts that are in this brain. But thank you, God, comes out maybe a couple times, two or three times a day at least. And what had happened was I was talking to some guys about this. And I don't think I'm giving away a whole lot of secrets, but one of the things that you have to acknowledge, you have to. I don't know that you can be successful without it. You might be able to take a lot of shortcuts and skip a lot of other things in the process, maybe, but you can't without this. In AA, they tell you that you've got to acknowledge that you're not the biggest thing in the universe, that there is something bigger than you, something bigger than all of us. You and I, in the Christian world, we call it God. Supreme being, whatever, okay? It's bigger than you. And without that acknowledgement, you're not going to have much of a chance of success if what you're wanting to do is to stop drinking. So every day, when I get up in the mornings, I say, thank you, God. Usually while I'm still laying there in the bed. And then after I get in the truck and I'm on my way to school, which is I have to drive east to get to the school where I work at. And so I'm driving into the sun most days. and I get to see the sunrise. And we get another thank you, God. And there might be just little things throughout the day. The point that I'm trying to make is, as I've grown older, I have a clearer understanding of what gratitude really, really means. I may not have a full and total understanding of it, but I have a much clearer understanding of it. And there are so many things, great and small, that I have to be thankful for. And when I look at the small ones, you know, I got a good job, I got a roof over my head, I got heat, I got running water, I got food, I have family, I have people that I love who love me. It's those little things that become biggest to me. But anyway, what I was going to get at as far as gratitude goes, and I'm sure these aren't novel ideas. I'm sure what I just spouted off, every one of you thought at one time or another. But for me, it was new. Hold on a minute. I got to take another drink of lemonade. All this talking makes a guy thirsty. And you know what? It really is lemonade. I'm a drink sleeve guy. When I was a kid, I was a Kool-Aid guy. Because in the neighborhood, we had a boatload of kids. And in the summertime, when they were out playing and getting hot, pop just was not the thing. When, you know, for literally pennies back in those days, you could make a couple of gallons of Kool-Aid and quench the thirst of a lot of heathen children. But what I was going to say, again, I digress yet again. The holidays are coming up. And I know that there are a lot of split families in the last 8 years. A lot of broken families. And they were broken for stupid reasons. And one of the stupidest reasons is politics. I had a buddy of mine. We were tight, man. We were tight. And in the early days of Facebook and social media, I made the mistake of taking people's political ideas seriously and got offended if they didn't take mine seriously. I've learned from that mistake. It was a costly one. It cost me one of my best friends over something stupid as politics, but it did, and it was a lot my fault. We were both guilty, but it's can't be undone. It can't be rehabilitated, and I don't want to see that happen to too many people. But anyway, Thanksgiving's coming up, and you're going to be around family members who probably didn't vote the way you voted. What I'm asking, and you'll know how to handle them, they're your family members, but a lot of these people on that side that voted over there are really pissed off. I mean, they're really pissed off. And at some point during the holidays, you guys might run into each other. And I'm just wondering, what are you going to do to kind of keep that cool? You know, because it's going to be incumbent upon you to keep it cool. I don't think they will. Okay? And I don't know how you do that. I mean, you can just keep your mouth shut and say, you know, right, whatever. And or you can engage them and see where that goes. Usually it doesn't end up very, very good. Doesn't turn out well because this is a holidays, man. Should be a festive time. It should be a time of fellowship, of camaraderie, of good food, of good laughs, good times. And those things that I just mentioned, the holidays, the good food, the camaraderie, the laughs, the whole fellowship, all that is way more important than politics. Piling up on the couch, everybody sprawled out in the living room after dinner watching the football game is way more important than politics. You understand? Spending the afternoon cussing each other, all in good fun, playing bocce is more important than politics. sitting in lawn chairs with a couple of beers or sodas, watching the smokers smoke, and talking is way more important than politics. Sitting around the fire pit at night is way more important than politics. Calling up your friend just because, no reason, just to talk, see what's going on, maybe hadn't talked to each other in a while, is way more important than politics. One of the most painful lessons, like I said earlier, I learned when it comes to this topic is really to never take anyone's politics seriously. Now, that might offend them because they think, well, he's marginalizing, he's invalidating. No, I'm not. I'm defining you by every other thing in your life but politics. Because those other things way outnumber politics when it comes to defining a person. Nothing more boring to me, nothing more boring than someone who defines themselves on one or two dimensions. I know gay people. I know militant in your face gay people. I know quiet, it's not a big deal, just kind of like leave me alone gay people. Using one thing or two things to define you, and I don't care what it is, whether it's sports, whether it's politics, especially if it's politics, whether it's social issues, hobbies, whatever, if one thing consumes you and that's all that you identify yourself by, you're a pretty flat one-dimensional person, and I think that's boring. So don't take people's politics. Now, it's hard because, see, they're not operating from the same position. They're taking your politics. When they call you names, when they accuse you of, you know, homophobia, femophobia, illegal alienophobia, you know, whatever it is that they're accusing you of, or that you're stupid for believing the way you do, they're not operating from your level. Why? Because they're taking your politics seriously. And that's how you respond. Because if your politics run contrary to their belief system, and they're taking you seriously, what else can they see you as but a threat? The enemy, the us and them. And, you know, there is so much, and I'm going to lay some blame here. The left is really big on identity politics. And it's out of fashion. And you know why it's out of fashion? Go to the map of the United States, look at all the red counties, and look at all the blue counties. And when you look at those blue counties, bear in mind that in this election, there are 54 fewer blue counties than there were in the 2020 election. And a lot of these areas where the counties were flipped have long been hardcore Democrat strongholds. So there's a change. A course correction. You want to call it normality? You want to call it the good old days? I don't know what you want to call it. I really don't. A return to normal? A return to an honest status quo? I don't know, but all this crazy stuff that's been happening has got to stop. And I think that's what's going to happen. I think we're on our way, hopefully, to achieving some kind of equilibrium in this country where it's not full tilt left or full tilt right, where it runs center with a little wibble wobble on either side. That's what this country thrives on. That's what this country prospers from. It is the fuel that allows this country to operate harmoniously. And we can. We can. We were doing it before all this crap happened. Think back. Those of you that are old enough, think back. Think back beyond COVID. Think back even to George W. Bush. And I'm not talking about foreign policy, because there have always been mistakes, plus that's one of them, but socially. Think back H.W. Bush. Think back Reagan. And look, and just look what's happened in the last 40 years, in the last 15 years, last 20 years. America works best, absolutely at its best. America is in tip-top condition when everybody leaves everybody else the hell alone. When nobody gets worn out because they have a differing opinion. Where we get away from this tribalism, this us versus them. And I know it's kind of impossible to get away from it totally. Because, you know, you're like good and evil. Okay, there's an us and them. People like evil, they're not part of us. You know, you'll see. So, but all this stuff is so subjective. And I think what we need to do is go back to leaving each other alone and respecting the concept that we all have opinions. We all are entitled to them, no matter whether they're brilliant or they're asinine or what. That's how it is. The Constitution guarantees us we can have those things. But Thanksgiving's coming up, and what are you going to do? You know, the holidays are here, and at some point, you're going to run into that family member or that pal, that buddy of yours from school or whatever, who's going to be ticked off. He's a Harris guy, or, you know, he was a Biden guy, and he's a Democrat, and he's always voted Democrat, and he doesn't like what's happened. How are you going to deal with that? I don't know either. I mean, I honestly don't know. I mean, I have my own ideas about it. And it's going to be up to us if this thing, you know, to keep a holiday blowout from blowing up, it's going to be up to us to fix that, because, you know, these guys, they're sore, they're sensitive, they're really bitter, and they've been bitter for a long time about a lot of stuff, and I don't know how you do it. Do you not go? Do you just keep your mouth shut? Do you engage them? Do you try? Don't think that you're going to use logic and reason, okay? If you're thinking about going in there and being real cool and cerebral, forget it. They're not going to listen to that. They're not going to listen to that. You know why? Because their guy lost and they're pissed off. They don't care about reason. They don't care about logic. They don't care about whether they're right or wrong. Their guy lost. And the guy that they hate worst in the world, worse than Hitler. And I'll tell you something, they really do hate him, and they really, really do hate us. Especially their political leadership. I can remember, I was a wee little nipper back in 1972 when the whole thing with Watergate broke loose. We won't go into the history of it. There's a lot of history to it. But in the end, the result was that Richard Nixon, who had won in a landslide victory in 1972, overwhelming to re-election, the Watergate thing came up. And the Democrats in the press who hated Richard Nixon, and there were no shortage of people who hated Richard Nixon. I mean, that's just it. It's true. They went after it, and they never let up. And ultimately, it led to the Watergate hearings, to a missing 18 minutes in a steno recorder, and ultimately with the resignation of Richard Nixon. And he was vilified throughout the country for years after that, going up into the late 80s. He was hated. He was the butt of jokes. It was everywhere. It was in our sitcoms. It was Tricky Dick. And I don't think that it was as bad as what Donald Trump has gone through. I really don't. The lenses that I look through, you know, there's 40 years difference. I was 10, 11 years old, but I was a news geek even then, and I understood what was going on. And today, as a 62-year-old, looking at what's going on. What I have seen concerning Donald Trump has been, I think, worse than what Richard Nixon had. And Richard Nixon was able to rehabilitate himself. By the late 80s, he was seen, you know, no longer as this disgraced president who, the first president to resign in order to avoid impeachment, doing so for the good of the country. I really think that it was, he knew it was the right decision, as painful as it could be, and he understood that really there was no choice at that time. So he did. So as wrong as Richard Nixon may be perceived of, he did the right thing in stepping down from the presidency. And I, you know, they've impeached Donald Trump twice. They've done all these different things. So they hate him and they hate you. Do you go? Do you not go? Do you keep your mouth shut when you go? Do you laugh at him? I don't know how it's going to work. But it's going to be painful for a lot of folks. And I hate that because, again, like I said, because of my own circumstances and my life as it is, I thank God every single day. No, I don't go to church. I don't preach. I don't do any of those things. Do I believe he's the Savior? Do I believe he's the way? Absolutely. Yeah. Jesus is the way. But I thank God every day. And I don't say, well, thank you, God, for my home. Thank you for my friends, the relationships. I just say, thank you, God, because he knows. I would be all day. Thank you. If I were to itemize things, if I were to load up my blessings and pay him tribute in that manner, not that he doesn't deserve it, that's all I would do. That's all I would have time to do today. And that's, God wants me to be a little bit more productive than that. So I say, thank you, God. And he knows what that means. He understands my gratitude. He knows I'm not kidding about it. He also understands there's so much for me to be thankful for. And there's probably things I'm leaving out. But he knows that I have so much to be thankful for, and it's all due to him. I tell you, politics can really screw up a lot of crap, man. And I get wrapped around the axle about it. And I'm not going to get maudlin or sentimental or nostalgic or anything like that right now, although I could. I'll do that next week before Thanksgiving, the week before Thanksgiving. I'll do that then. But again, all this happens, all this angst, all this name-calling, all this vitriol, all these pejoratives, all these hard feelings, all this intolerance is because we take politics too seriously. I'm not saying we shouldn't be vigilant or anything like that. I'm saying, you know, and I don't want people taking my politics seriously, because if they do, look what happens. Look at the name calling. You see it on Facebook. You see it in social media all the time. I got a buddy of mine. I love him. We've known each other for 50 years. I mean, children. And when it comes to golfing, when it comes to hunting or fishing or marinades for beef jerky or probably just about anything but politics, when he speaks, I listen. When he starts talking politics, it's like Charlie Brown's teacher, man. And I just thumbs up and good job. And I'm not gonna take it seriously. I'm just not. And he shouldn't take mine seriously either. We gotta learn how to respect each other's opinions and understand that they're just exactly that. Some of them are right, some of them are wrong. Some of them are informed, some of them aren't. It doesn't matter. They're your opinions. And in this country, you have your right to your opinions. And you can express them. It's not going to be much of a problem for me, really, Most of the people in my family, we're all like-minded when it comes to politics. And I don't know that we've ever really fully discussed it a lot at the dinner table on a daily basis, let alone as a kid, at the holiday table. And we're not going to here. And that's great. I got a buddy of mine, like I said, he's on the other side there and thinks I'm out of my mind. But you know what? I'm cool with it. I don't take him seriously. He says that it doesn't affect me. You know, it's cool. And I'm going to invite him over. I've got, we're going to have some smoked turkey legs and a turkey breast and cowboy beans and roasted ribs. It's going to be a great menu. And I'm going to invite him over. And he'll come over or he won't come over. And if he comes over and says something, I'm not going to get in the middle of it. I'm not going to take him seriously. And it's going to be a great dinner. It's going to be a great evening. And they'll figure that out. But you know what? I hope you can negotiate that successfully. And I hope whatever you do makes it so that, you know, it diminishes the bad blood. That you'll give them an example of something that says, hey, you know what? Maybe I've been too hard on them. Maybe I shouldn't let politics be the firewall between good friendships and family relationships, because it can and it does. Should it? I don't know. Wow, we went into extra innings here a little bit, an hour and 11. I really like this new format. I really, really like this new format. I don't have to break the show up. I told you about that when we had the radio station. We had to have spots, you know, for the sponsors to play. So the first half of the show was 25 minutes 50 seconds. So whatever it was I was talking about, I had to either conclude or tell them, you know, we'll be back on the other side with more of this. But whatever it was, I had to bring the first half of the show to a close after 25 minutes and 50 seconds. Then there was 10 seconds of bumper music. And then that took us into the commercials. And then from the commercials, I came back on. And then we did the last part of the show. And the last part of the show was 28 minutes, 40 seconds. And then bring it all to a close. And now, you know, we're doing it this way. And I'm operating out of RSS.com for Mojo. I love it. There's no time limit. There's no time frame. I could go 3 hours if I wanted. It doesn't matter. And I everything keeps moving. I don't have to put the emergency brake on those random neural firings and let them all pile up and then try to unjumble it and start that train moving again. But we are going to bring it to a close today. We've done well. I want to thank you guys for the opportunity to listen. You know, I'm still working the bugs out on this new format, and I appreciate your patience, and I appreciate you looking me up. Tell your friends about the program. Share it with them. I know you might know at least maybe one other kindred spirit where this kind of conversation and this kind of stuff appeals to them, and I would appreciate it very much if you would spread the word. We're heard here Sunday afternoons. Usually, I try to have everything posted and at the platforms by about 2:30 or 3. So we're doing good today. We'll have it out there before 2 o'clock. So thank you once again for the opportunity to hang out with you and talk about this stuff. Our time is limited. We got a letter the other day. Blog Talk Radio will be ceasing operation as of January 31st. So we will be on Blog Talk. ACP will be on Blog Talk until then. And then after that, we'll be with RSS.com doing the audio podcast. And we're trying to get some stuff together, and I'm still working on doing things from StreamYard, which is a video component. And the sad fact of the matter is, nowadays, if they can't see you... So we're going to do it. We're going to start doing some video stuff. And I want to thank you guys who tune in for that as well. And as we go along with that, more information will be forthcoming. That's all the time we got today. We will be back next week. Once again, thank you for the opportunity to hang out with you and talk about this stuff. We will be back next week taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you then.